I'd like to begin today by thanking Judge Checkey, who comes to us from the District of New Jersey, who's going to be sitting by designation on today's cases.
Thank you.
So our first case for argument is 23-1221. I don't even know how to pronounce this. Help. Again?
Royal Philips, Your Honor.
Royal Philips, I can say that, versus Quectel Wireless. Mr. Beck, please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the Court. The Board's unpatentability findings, based on the Black reference, should be vacated because they're based on errors in claim construction. In particular, the Board failed to give weight to the terms as they are used in the context of the claims, particularly when read in the context and the teachings of the patent specification. There's I think, two issues related to that, and they both deal with timing elements. The first is whether each of the operations recited, and I'm going to back up, I'm going to refer to Claim 23, which the parties have agreed as being exemplary. Independent Claim 23 recites four elements in sequence that are at issue in the appeal. The first issue is whether the predetermined time period in which a data block is transmitted over a channel requires, when read in the context of the claim, that the subsequent operations, particularly elements 3 and 4, all occur within the predetermined time period. The Board found that there was no restriction either as to the order of operation or the actual required decreasing in data transmit power followed by increasing of data transmit power.
Just the indications had to be within the predetermined period, but the action on those indications didn't.
Yeah, and to put a finer point, that's correct, Your Honor, but put a finer point on it, the Board found that the only the indication recited in element 4 had to be performed in the predetermined time period. The second issue really comes down to the meaning of what in response to the indication means. According to the Board, if there is an indication of a reduction in channel quality, as recited in claim in element 3, or an indication of a increase in channel quality, as recited in element 4, the resulting decrease in data transmit power and increase in data transmit power could happen at any time whatsoever. So, based on Quectel's argument, it's merely a causal requirement. It could be any time after. And it could be any time after, including the next frame or multiple frames later, which is actually what what Quectel relied on in mapping the claim elements to the prior art. And we submit that the claims, when read in light of the specification, as they must be, that just is contrary to how a person of ordinary skill in the art would understand the sequence required by the claims. I'll briefly touch on the order of what I call the order of operation issue, and how it ties into the claim language. So the first element requires transmitting over a channel in a predetermined time period to a data block. So it calls out the requirement of a channel and the data block all being done. This transmission is all over this predetermined time period. And the Board indicated that equated that with a frame. So that a frame in these technical standards that govern wireless communication has a predetermined interval in which a data block is set.
I have a question about predetermined time. Is predetermined time defined anywhere in the patent?
Yes, Your Honor. I think the claim itself defines it as the time period in which a data block comprising information symbols and parity check symbols is transmitted, And that's echoed in the specification as well. In column 3, this is appendix 73, column 3, line 48.
Is it just something that is to be determined as sequential, or is there an actual amount of time associated with that?
There's a specific amount of time associated with the transmission of a frame. You know, for example, in the prior art that Bochtel relied on, it's a CDMA 2000 standard defines 26.66 milliseconds, and that's what Bochtel repeatedly mapped the predetermined time period to. The specification's drawn to a different standard that has a different time period, but they're predefined time periods. That's why they're predetermined. The subsequent steps in follow and act on that data block that's being transmitted. So in the second element, there are TPC commands that indicate either a reduction or an increase in channel quality. And this is relates to what's called closed-loop power control. So there's feedback.
And so where do you get from the language that all of the other steps have to act on that data block?
It's the reference, like, for example, Your Honor, in elements 3 and 4, both refer to the indication of a reduction in channel quality. And that's referring to the channel recited in element 1. And they also are, the actual operation is first decreasing the data transmit power, and then in element 4, increasing the data transmit power. And so data there is referring to the prior recitation of a data block. So for those reasons, we think the claims do support an order of operation, and it's reinforced by the specification. The second issue deals with in response to. So according to the board, this, as I mentioned previously, in response to can happen, the resulting first decrease in power and then increase in power can happen at any time whatsoever. And that's completely contrary to what the specification describes. There's not a single embodiment that supports the board's construction in either respect. And every embodiment supports Phillips' construction as to both issues.
And just to be clear, you haven't suggested, or in any event, all the embodiments are described as mere embodiments, right? We don't have a case with the present invention requires kind of language.
Your Honor, I think we do, at least implicitly.
In accordance with the invention?
And it's more than that. It's relative to the description of Figure 4, which I think really captures the invention. And I'm referring to the description at the Joint Appendix 73, column 4, lines 10 to 25. If you can bear with me, I'll go through this paragraph, but just to get directly to your question, Your Honor, the second sentence describing
What line number? Your column 4, what line number?
Starting at line 10, Your Honor.
Okay.
It starts with, while the data block is being transmitted, so it's put in the context of a data block transmission, the quality of the first channel varies, as illustrated in Fig 2. Fig 2 is the conventional, it illustrates a conventional process where there's channel quality variations. And normally, as shown in Fig 3, if channel quality goes up, then you get a TPC command saying turn down the power. The goal is to have maintain a target power level. You don't want it too high, which can unnecessarily affect battery consumption.
But even if this paragraph really does stand for the operation exactly as you've explained, I'm not sure I see how it is really responsive to Judge Toronto's question, because it doesn't say the present invention is. Column 4 and the portion you're talking about is describing figure 5. Figure 5 expressly says this illustrates various scenarios in accordance with the invention. In accordance with the invention isn't the same thing as the present invention requires. In accordance, many different embodiments could all be in accordance with the invention.
Understood, Your Honor. I think here there's two points. We're relying on the description of figure 4, which I think just shows the you know, tracks what is in both independent claims. And it says, it contrasts the conventional process and says, don't do the conventional process, where before you would increase power, we're going to decrease power and do the reverse to try to recover from that unconventional process. And it says, if the quality of the first channel 160 degrades to an extent determined by the first criteria, the control means, instead of, as in known schemes, increasing the transmit power, I'm skipping ahead, according to the invention, decreases the transmit power of the data to a level P1.
In this description, what is the predetermined period?
It's the period for transmission of the data block.
Well, if this is talking about figure 4, figure 2 and figure 4 are both in the paragraph. So if you're looking just at those two figures, figure 2 just has a time axis without markings. Figure 4 at least has T1 through T6.
Right,
does one of those mark the edge of the predetermined period?
So two things. First, the reference to the data block, which is defined as the equivalent to the predetermined time period. Secondly, figure 4, which is illustrating the operation of the invention, that figure 4 and more is corresponding to the timing in fig 2. And then when the description of fig 5 is presented, it shows channel quality. That is channel quality as in fig 2. And the time periods that run within the time period from 0 to T sub F, which is a time period for a frame, in fig 5G.
I see. So everything in figure 4 is viewed as within a single time period, a
correct.
Predetermined time period.
That's correct.
See. Okay.
And importantly, again, going back to this description of figure 4, relative to this response, in response to element of the claim, it says when the control means determines that the channel quality has subsequently increased to an extent determined by a second criterion, the control means increases the time, the transmit power of the data. So the description's clear as the timing. And this is illustrated again in Fig 4 and in Fig 5G.
Well, you know what? If you look at 5G, is that actually the inverse where it's depicting transmit power decreasing that follows power increases? It looks like it's the reverse of the figure before it.
It's showing the channel quality, Your Honor, as in Fig 2. So, you know, channel quality is going up and then it goes down. And then from, as explained in reference to this drawing, at time period T1, as shown in Fig 4, normally when you hit this power level P2, the problem would be, you know, signals degrading, you might go over P2. And the inventors, rather than just keeping it at P2, which is, you know, continuing to swim upstream, it says, let's just drop the power, we'll drop it down to P1. That's illustrated in Fig 4 and Fig 5.
Well, I believe the expert, Dr. Ackle, testified about this, and he indicated that it was not actually following decrease when you need to decrease, increase when you need to increase, but it was the inverse of that. Do you have any response for that?
I do, Your Honor. First, the board, I don't think, relied on that testimony, and there's a reason for it. Dr. Ackle kind of cherry-picked, said, look at T2, that's where you do the increase, and that precedes T3, where you do another decrease. But the relevant description shows that every single increase is preceded by an unconventional decrease. So T1 precedes T2, T3 precedes T4.
You've used all your time, including your rebuttal time. You're almost out of it, but I want to ask one last question, and then I'll restore your rebuttal time. But my question is, I don't think that I could be wrong, but I don't think Mr. Courtney is going to get up and dispute with you that the figures and the description of those figures show these events occurring in a predetermined time period. I didn't understand them to point to the spec and say, no, look, there's an embodiment that isn't within the predetermined time period. What I understood them to argue, though, is that the claims just don't require that. It is true that these embodiments articulate it functioning this way, but the claims themselves require only indications occurring during the predetermined time period, and the increasing or decreasing has to be in response to those indications, but could occur outside of the time period.
But
I think that's his argument as I understand it. So how do you refute that?
Yeah, briefly, it's contrary to how a person of ordinary skill understands closed loop power control. You have to respond when the indication's received. That's what the specification's saying, when it's received.
Even though there's a place in the spec, I think it's column one, but I don't remember where it says tracking might not be perfect, and I think what that is indicating is might not always respond exactly when we receive it.
I think what they're saying there, Your Honor, is there's a delay on signal path propagation and processing, but that is still going to, once it's processed, you respond. If you don't, if you wait until another frame, you could get additional signals, additional TPC commands, and then you're not tracking. You're not following the feedback you get, and that is inefficient for the reasons we described in our.
We'll restore your rebuttal time. Let's hear from Mr. Courtney.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Chief Judge Moore. Rob Courtney from Fish and Richardson for Quectel. I think you have aptly characterized our argument. There's the specification, which certainly in many places does describe signal transmission of the data block within a predetermined time period. That's there. But the claims simply don't recite it. So this is not an issue, and I don't hear my colleague representing Philips arguing otherwise, where the board has taken a claim and brought it out of, put the preferred embodiment out of scope or done something like that, right? Everyone agrees the embodiments are covered by the claims as construed by the board. The issue is whether Philips, when it wrote these claims, included sufficient narrowing to claim only what was in the specification and not claim broader. And we think the record here, particularly the claims themselves, shows broad claiming. There's three themes I would like to hit on. Surplusage, grammar, and guidance. I think the surplusage point is pretty straightforward. Dr. Lanning testified in deposition that were someone to strike the words predetermined time period from limitation 23.4, his analysis would be unaffected. And that is the essence of surplusage. And that is this court, consistent with many other courts interpreting instruments of law, has heavily criticized interpretations that render otherwise operative claim language surplusage and generally gives preference to interpretations that don't suffer that problem. And the board's interpretation here doesn't suffer that problem. It says, just as Chief Judge Moore described, that the indication must be within the predetermined time period, even if other elements of the claim, they might occur during the predetermined time period, but they don't have to occur during the predetermined time period. As to the discussion of the figures and the text that we just heard, Judge Toronto, my colleague directed you to figure 5 in your discussion of kind of figure 4 and how it relates. It's notable that figure 4 doesn't disclose the predetermined time period. It doesn't. The predetermined time period throughout the patent.
Well, it's just, except that the discussion in the bottom of column 3 onto column 4 starts with figure 5. And then turns to the waveforms in figure 4. The T1, T2, T3, T4, T5, T6 are all lined up at the bottom of figure 5. I guess it's 5G, identically with figure 4.
So I think there's something to note here, though, which is that the predetermined time period is TF. And, we're being told this predetermined time period is so critical to the claim, you can't understand the invention without it, and then figure 4 doesn't depict TF. TF is not of interest in figure 4. And figure 4 is I think the parties generally understand that it's depicting this idea of, you know, rather than just keep increasing the power for Everler's channel quality degrades, there will be a point at which we decrease rather than increase as channel quality degrades.
This is not going to be a terribly well-formed question, so I hope you try to get at what you infer I'm trying to get at. So a significant part, I think, of your opposite number's argument is that when you start with the first paragraph of 23, of claim 23, the data block transmission is supposed to occur in a predetermined time period. And I guess one way that I understand the argument is that if you don't have all of what is going on in the rest of the claim within that same predetermined time period, you're kind of making nonsense out of the inclusion of that predetermined time period from the very outset of the claim, nonsense to a skilled artisan. So how does this make sense if you're thinking about how an artisan reads this and says, oh, I see what the invention is here, if pieces of it are outside what the claim basically starts with, this predetermined time period?
So I think on this issue, the claims really are instructive, right? And they describe there's a data block and a predetermined time period. Now, as a matter of background, there was a lot of dispute below as to whether a predetermined time period could include two frames or just one. The board expressly didn't reach it. So I just want to lay that platform. But they are different concepts.
So they determined this is all happening within one frame.
They determined that Quectel had a variety of argument that was based on a single frame, and because the board found that that argument was sufficient to demonstrate unpatentability, it need go no further into that edge case. Well, what if...
So the board didn't actually find that a predetermined period was a frame, is that could be a frame, and once it could be a frame, the prior art taught that.
That's correct, Your Honor. However, the frame or predetermined time period, to keep the claim language, and the data block are different qualitative concepts. And actually, the claims kind of contemplate, you know, your goal is to transmit the data block within a single predetermined time period, but sometimes you might not. And I noted claim 4. It's a dependent claim, and it says we're depending from previous claims. Where the resumption proceeds from the point of suspension, so there's a suspension and a resumption, and the block is truncated if the predetermined time period expires. So you might not get done. Now that's a dependent claim, and it's saying, here we're going to truncate because it expired. The implication is that the independent is broader than that. Sometimes the transmission of the data block might take multiple predetermined time periods. There isn't this strict cutoff that my counterpart is advocating. Our briefing directed the court to the Luminera opinion, and I really do think it's instructive. Luminera is a flameless candle. There were two disputed limitations, and this court analyzed and said the first, which had to do, you know, it's this little plastic flame, it's kind of wiggling, right? The first limitation was it had to revolve around certain axes, and the court said, certainly there's embodiments that do that, but that doesn't seem to, we're not going to read that into this claim where it's not recited. The second was chaotic movement, and this court said, you read this specification, it really is clear that the invention works because of the chaotic movement. That is a theme that's returned to again and again and again within the specification. It's part of the secret sauce. And so this court said the chaotic movement is a restriction on the claim. The movement among multiple axes is not. I think that's very instructive.
I don't really understand your claim 4 argument. Could you repeat it again? And did you make it in your brief?
I did not. So this is, okay. You know, we're conversation is moving along.
Conversation is moving along between who?
Between the panel and the advocates.
Did you bring up claim 4? I don't remember being part of a conversation about claim 4. I don't think conversation is moving along. I think you just brought up a new argument you didn't make in your brief.
In that case, I did.
Okay, well, why don't you try and explain it to me anyway, since I didn't have the benefit of having briefing on it.
Yeah. Claim 4 says you've got a circumstance in which the predetermined time period is going to expire, and we're going to truncate the data block. So that's very straightforward. That's a claimed embodiment. However, this is the dependent claim, and it suggests that the independent claim is broader, that the predetermined time period might expire, and we're going to keep going. We're not going to truncate.
Okay, but
so to read otherwise, this claim has no substance.
All right, if you're looking at the examples, though, there is case law that says you can consider them if they're going to shed light on the invention. And I believe here Appellant is trying to do that. Mm-hmm. They're trying to say, look, here is our invention. This is logically how it proceeds. If we look at those examples, then will they assist us in shedding light on the intended invention? And would that be sufficient for us?
I think certainly they assist the court as they assisted the board in understanding the invention. What I don't think the examples in the patent do is authorize either the board or this court to rewrite the claim so that the predetermined time period becomes a hard limit that not just the indicating has to happen during that, but the increase and decrease have to happen within that predetermined time period. That's a concept that Phillips could have included. It didn't.
What about the order of operations? Do you dispute that these steps have to occur in the order they're articulated in Claim 23?
So, two answers. We do, and we don't understand how it matters to this case.
Well, that was going to be my next question, but you do dispute it. So how can you, I don't understand, how can you decrease power before you have the indication? You can't, right? Or before you receive the transfer. Like,
the one is causing the other.
Certain, yeah, that there's a cause and effect component right. to these elements. So I, how could they be reordered and this invention still work? I mean, I guess I'm not sure it matters to the claim construction, but I am sort of reading these and thinking they have to happen in order.
Certainly, the claim is very clear that the increasing and decreasing of transmit power are caused by the indication. So,
well, and isn't this whole invention about the decreasing and then the increasing in that order?
That's the part where I think we depart the parties. The claim, certainly the one is recited before the other, but there's nothing in logic that says decreasing has to precede increasing or increasing has to precede decreasing. You know, we've been given figures that show channel quality kind of moving in such a way that you would decrease before you increase,
well, you know what?
But
if
it
you'd
could
like
be
to,
different.
If you'd like to point out from the examples, where do you think that that's not shown? And you may have mentioned it before, but I'd like to take a look at it again.
Yeah, so I would, it's figure four, and I think we reproduced this in our brief. It's our Dr. Ackle kind of edited. Not edited, what's the word? Annotated. It's at appendix 2872. And he said, there's a lot of increases and a lot of decreases. The claim doesn't establish a relationship between increases and decreases, so you can find them in any order. I mean, one.
So if you're looking at figure four, if you'd like to walk me through that and show me where that's not happening.
I'm sorry, well, what's not happening?
Like, in terms of the decrease following a decrease and increase following an increase, you're saying that's not always happening. Where would that be demonstrated in figure four?
So, I want to make sure I'm answering the question.
So if you have a quality issue, mm-hmm. right, in terms of that, and then you're going to increase your power, you're going to decrease your power after it. And similarly, if you have a quality, issue going upward, you would increase your transmit power going upward as well, correct? Is that, I believe that's what your adversary is arguing, correct?
I am trying to answer the question.
Okay, no worries. Why don't you do it this way? Why don't you explain to me from figure four, from the beginning of T1 through 6?
Sure. So, you know, as this is shown, there is a decrease in transmit power at T1. That is what is shown here. So there's no dispute that's shown. However, that only applies if we begin our analysis at zero. Right? If we cover up the diagram and start, you know, a little bit to the right of T1, then the first act is the increase. That's the only point we're making. There's nothing in the claim that requires us to start our
analysis.
I guess
let me ask it this way. Are all the examples in sync in that demonstration?
I mean, This patent, you know...
Is there any figure that's an outlier that has a different demonstration?
I think all figures exhibit this phenomenon. They all show the decrease first, but they all have the same characteristic, which you could have just started the analysis at a different place, started tracking, you know, at T1.5 instead of 0, and then you would see the increase first.
So then does the sequence coming from the figures match the language from the claims themselves?
As drawn, it does. However,
I suppose you could say that since the claim requires just one decrease and one increase, that figure 4 shows that just when you get past T2, from the beginning to T2, and one doesn't need to consider the entirety of figure 4 as an illustration, because that would be repeating what's in claim 23, doing it 3 times.
I think that's right. I think, as a litigator, I think of this on the infringement side. You would just need to show one increase and one decrease, and you've shown practice of the claim. And I think that's the disclosure that has been made here.
Can I return to, this is always the danger of raising, if you're raising something you haven't briefed, we don't get a chance to think about it before. Do I take it your point about claim 4 is that it implies that the entire data block in paragraph 1 of claim 23 doesn't have to be transmitted in this predetermined time period? You just have to be kind of in the process of trying to do that?
I think claim 4 is suggest, and we do discuss in our brief the suspension resumption, you know, that is
right,
something
those
that issue.
Extreme increases in decreases.
Right. You know, I think this is suggesting that there isn't the kind of tight relationship between predetermined time period and data transmission that my colleague is proposing. I do have other arguments. I see I'm out of time.
We're going to give him extra time. So if you want to take another minute or two and address your other argument, that's fine.
Sure. I do, you know, first is a variation on the theme. You know, when we return to classical claim construction, modifiers are supposed to appear next to the terms they modify. That's HTC. We don't see our colleagues from Philips disputing HTC. We actually don't see them responding to HTC. So this idea that the in response to the indicator that it should actually be, I'm sorry.
How would, I guess, if I were to construe this the way the board did, as only the indication has to occur in the predetermined time and the increase or decrease could occur at some later period, why isn't Mr. Beck right about, well, that would really make this invention not work properly, because then you could have multiple transmissions come through that sort of overwrite, and you wouldn't actually achieve the invention because you wouldn't have the decreasing and the increasing, which is the efficiency and the improvement of the invention. So, I mean, if you don't limit it the way that they're suggesting, wouldn't you have, you know, a strong possibility of not having an invention that operates according to the claims? And
so I have two responses to that. First is that, you know, Philips has kind of deprecated the idea that the causation requirement, the in response to requirement, they've kind of suggested that's not meaningful. We would contend it is meaningful. It is a causation requirement that one must lead to another. And so we would propose that that's where the necessary relationship comes from. And frankly, Philips is the one that put it there. Philips wrote these claims. The second is, we discussed this in our brief, this court has a history of saying we don't construe claims based on the purpose of the invention. We construe the claims as written, illuminated by the specification.
It really does depend on just how unfunctional the evident advance is if you interpret the language a particular way.
And that's our understanding too. I think in this instance.
So, but why is that? I mean, are you just saying that the real advance here is to say if there's a lot of noise, instead of what people usually do, yell louder, go quiet for a while until the noise goes down?
I mean, maybe, I think that really is the invention here. I think the alleged invention. I would also say below, the challenge was, you know, our prior art had some things happening in one frame and some things happening in the very next frame. So we weren't talking about eons. We're talking about milliseconds. And the, you know, we believe strongly that doing things in the next frame was consistent with this invention. Now, the board didn't need to reach that because it said the claim didn't actually require doing things in a single predetermined time period in the manner Phillips is proposing. But, you know, our, you know, if one reviews those aspects of our petition and our reply that, that weren't really discussed in much detail in the briefing, you'll see that really this is happening. You know, that exact same, oh, channel quality has degraded, I'll go quiet, wait for things to cool off, then I'll come back later, really is present in the prior art. Some of it is happening in the very next frame. But the idea that this was, that that responsive requirement was not sufficient to establish an invention, you know, we would dispute. And finally, Judge Toronto, I think you started questioning early on that. This patent includes those statements that these examples are only for example. They're not for restriction. We see it in a lot of patents. But this case illuminates that those statements have meaning. These patent, these claims are for the public. The public is supposed to understand what the invention is. And we think it's incongruous for a patentee to come in and say, yeah, we said not to read restrictions in from the examples, but we really do need a whole bunch of restrictions read into the claims because otherwise the claims that we wrote would be insufficient.
You
to
know what?
The invention.
I'd like to turn your attention though to figure six. If you could take a moment.
Certainly.
And figure six appears to be an entire flow chart with the various steps involved, the sequences. Mm-hmm. If you take a look at that step by step, does that not in fact marry the language that's coming off of claim 23?
Certainly it falls within the scope of claim 23. But I don't think anything about this, particularly because it is presented as an example and not a dispositive description of...
And I recognize that's an issue that we are dealing with, mm-hmm. whether it's an example, you know, whether it's something that's been referred to, and whether it shouldn't be wholly relied on. I understand that. But just taking a look at this particular figure, you know what, give me your best argument on this. Because my question really pertains to how does this figure relate to claim 23?
I mean, I want to be...
Would it not be sufficient to support the language that the appellant is presenting?
I want to be responsive. I think the figure is what it is. I don't think its content is disputed. But if we had a claim that says, I claim a house, it has four walls and a roof, and then the figure shows it's made of bricks, traditionally that is not enough to say bricks are part of this claim.
How do you read this figure, though? If you would take a look at it, what is the sequence on this figure?
Well, certainly
would
it begins...
Would you be able to derive predetermined time by looking at this?
Well, it recites TF, and the patent is pretty clear. That's the terminology that means, you know, F is where the predetermined time period ends. We don't know how many milliseconds or anything like that, but it is conceptually... Certainly, TF is a part of this, the predetermined time period is part of this figure.
Okay.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Courtney. Mr. Beck, we'll restore your 3 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll start where we left off. Figure 6 does illustrate the claim, claim 23. It checks for whether you're within the predetermined time period twice. So there's a block that has a beginning and an end. And it can't go beyond T sub F. It says specifically, if you hit the end point, if you reach T sub F, appendix 75, column 8, line 19, if time T sub F has been reached, flow precedes the block 580, where transmission of the data block ends. That's the end of the process. And that's consistent with claim 23. Claim 23, again, with this, I'll go back to the response and then first decrease, then increase. That captures the what the whole description in the specification sets forth, it's response to the indication of an increase in channel quality. Channel quality is the channel over which the data block is transmitted, and the result is increasing the data transmit power. That's referring to the data block, which again has a beginning and an end, just as shown in Fig. 6. There's no example of a response to an indication having any meaningful delay. It's just not described, and the description of Fig. 4 I mentioned before specifically says that when the indication happens, then you get the consequential action of first decreasing power, then increasing it.
Do you have any on-the-fly response to Claim 4?
Your Honor, I think truncation is not inconsistent. It just means you leave off, in some examples you might suspend transmission for a time period so that you're not transmitting information at that point. So I think there's examples where you can you can leave off like some of the error correction code, but the block still has a beginning and an end. There's no suggestion you go past T sub F.
And you could have the noise decrease, quiet increase, and still run out of time within the data block and have to truncate. That is all of the elements that you want to put in the predetermined period could still result in the Claim 4 situation.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. Okay. You're going to have, what the invention's about is it's so noisy, why stay at this high level? Drop down the level. If it gets better, then go up. This is in response to the argument that T2 could be before T3. That's a tortured reading, and it's completely at odds with the description of the invention. That never can happen. There's no point that if conditions are improving that you increase the signal. That means you're just wasting battery and you're creating interference with other devices. So that you never do that. You decrease, hope it gets better, then increase. And that is the contrast with the prior art, and the claim language reflects it.
Thank you, Mr. Beck. I thank both counsel. This case is taken under submission.